Hello and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I am Chris Austin.
And I am Luke Parker.
And this is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the historic Phoenix Cinema in North London. And this week, we are discussing Irish filmmaker John Crowley's new film, We Live in Time. Luke, take it away.
Cool. So told through a non-linear narrative, We Live in Time follows the relationship of talented chef Almut, played by Florence Pugh, and recent divorcee Tobias, played by Andrew Garfield. Despite weaving its way through pivotal moments of their life together, like their chance first encounter or the birth of their child, the thematic and emotional core of the film is heavily rooted in Almut's most recent recurrence of ovarian cancer and the choices she must make for her and her family. Side by side, we are witnesses to a raw, blossoming love, its frictions and cracks, and its unexpected, unplanned delights. However, always most prevalent in our eyes are the final pages of their relationship, where Almut must battle her rapidly declining health, her desire to be remembered, and her wish for a meaningful and worthwhile final chapter. We Live in Time is a deeply emotional lens on love and the fragility of life. It proves to be an intimate and profoundly real look-in on the lives of two ordinary people coping with the unbearable fact that their time together may not be forever after. So Chris, how was this film for you?
Thank you, Luke. Very nice. Yeah, this film was really lovely. Yeah. Really lovely, really emotional, and just a really well-told story. I don't think I quite knew what to expect from it. I thought maybe it is going to be, I'm sure I knew it was going to be a tearjerker, that one of them was going to be ill or something. But I think, yeah, it's a really, really well-told and well-acted story. Yeah. What did you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Incredibly well-acted. And, you know, for what is such like an intimate and deep character study, that's really what the film has to land on, if anything, is how well we believe and connect with these characters. And, you know, Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh are both insanely talented actors, and seeing them together on screen, like, it's almost impossible to not connect with them. So in that respect, yeah, really, really lovely film. I was almost surprised that this film isn't based on a book.
You know, yeah.
Like, it kind of hits all the beats of like this popular novel, popular romance novel. So I was almost surprised that it was actually like an original script.
Such a good point, mate. Yeah, such a good point.
But yeah. Sorry, you go.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. Yeah, you absolutely can sort of imagine this being based on a book written by Colleen Hoover or something
yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
You know, it's
yeah.
one of the usual names. Yeah, no, it's Nick Payne is the writer of this, who's actually a well-known playwright.
I can see that.
Yeah, same. But it's yeah, I mean, is the film emotionally manipulating? Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
but it manipulates very well. Mm-hmm. And it will get you. I mean, did you find yourself welling up at any point?
Yeah. I will say this, though, that I don't think the film, at least for me, it didn't hit the emotional beats it was trying to until the very last moments of the film. Because I kind of felt the film was trying to pull tears out of me throughout, but it never really got to that point. But like I said, not until like the very last scene, which was for me very reminiscent of the final scene from After Sun. You know, with Paul Mescal like and his daughter, they kind of waving to each other, and then he walks away into the dark room. Like the final shot with Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield and their daughter, even though maybe not quite as metaphorical as After Sun, it kind of felt very similar in that respect. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good comparison to make, actually. A really good comparison. And it's almost, we don't really want to dive into spoiler territory here, but it's the distance between them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that wave. And then it's like the crossfade where you can still see her as we move into whatever that jump forward in time now is. It's mm-hmm. just, oh yeah, it really hits you. But you say that it you felt like that it was trying to pull tears from you throughout, but did it feel forced in any way? Or
no, I wouldn't say it felt forced, because it is a very well constructed story. And it never feels really over the top. The only thing for me that kind of feels over the top is Andrew Garfield's performance in some aspects,
Yeah.
I feel like there's not one scene in this film where he hasn't got like tears in his eyes.
Yes, it's true.
Sometimes his like really soft voice is a little bit much.
Understood.
Maybe a little bit unbelievable, but I don't think it was forced at all.
No. Okay, good. Well, that's good. That's good at least. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I totally get you about Garfield. I mean, it's, and at the same time, it's like, I don't knock the performance in any way. Cause I think they both are giving really good performances. They have a lovely chemistry with each other. But I do feel like Pugh's character is more fleshed out and maybe slightly edges it in terms of performance. I think she's got the harder job to do in a way. And it feels like the movie, is really more interested in her. She gets to have the really full life where you see the ins and outs of her job, her relationships, friends, family,
mm-hmm.
and then this roller coaster that she goes on with this, this medical diagnosis. And she just, I mean, I think she's fantastic. She rises to the fore so completely.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Florence Pugh definitely eclipses Andrew Garfield, but that's mainly down to the nature of the story, like you said, of her being the mm-hmm. epicenter of the story.
I
mean, even for example, like, do we ever really know what Andrew Garfield does at least in the later moments of the film?
I mean,
like, what's he do for a living? Is he like a stay-at-home dad? Like,
I don't know anything other than that.
Yeah, but that's like, that's in the earlier flashbacks, isn't it?
True. Oh, well, yeah. There you go. Exactly. Like, I never knew. Does that change for him at any point? Is he still the Weetabix guy, Mr. Weetabix? Yeah. I don't. And it does feel, I think, early on in the film. Obviously, it's a non-linear narrative, so we're flashing back and forth through time. But obviously, the film has to show you how they met.
Yeah.
And there was one thing about the film where I was like, okay, so they clearly wanted the meet cute to be this really charming thing of he gets hit by her car. But the reason why he got hit kind of irritated me. But by the end of the movie, I could let it go. But basically, he's in a hotel room and he's trying to sign some papers and his pen runs out of ink. So he goes on, he's going through a very emotionally traumatic time anyway, but he leaves the hotel and he tries to walk to the nearest. So I'm getting distracted by my brother's cat, who I'm looking after. Paying no attention to the door being closed, pushing it open. So he walks out to try and find a pen from like the local supermarket. And I remember I turned to Carrie Anne in the cinema and I was like, why not just go downstairs to reception to the front desk and ask them for a pen?
I thought the exact same.
And, the pen plays into the hole. He drops it on the road and has to lean down and pick it. I'm like, surely there was a way to have him get hit by a car that doesn't involve this much legwork.
I agree. It was, quite far-fetched. That's very true. Very true.
Yeah. But again, like I said, I can let that go, you know, because ultimately the film becomes so much deeper and more emotional than something so small that I can, you know, have a nibble with.
Like, maybe it doesn't take long for you to forget that ever happened, really, does it? So
exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. And actually, I had forgotten, but now it just sprung to me now as we were as we were talking about it. I think what helps as well with Andrew Garfield's performance is knowing, because I don't know if you've been paying attention to his sort of promotional campaign that he's been going on, you know, in marketing, promoting the movie.
I haven't seen any of it, actually.
He's been talking a lot about his mother who died of cancer. And about his, you know, personal experiences dealing with that. I think very recently he did a Sesame Street appearance where he gets very emotional and he starts crying while talking to...
Oh, actually, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that outside of it being, hey, we have Andrew Garfield, it's tying into the whole We Live in Time promotion for the film. So it's going into the film watching... You know, knowing that almost informed the performance a lot as well, knowing that, okay, I'm sure he's drawing on a lot of, while it's a very different relationship, a lot of real world pain to draw on her.
I imagine so. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. What did you think about the direction by John Crowley? Cause it's very simple. But I found it really effective.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that. It was quite simple, and it was kind of unusual to see these massive actors who at this point were really used to seeing in, you know, really big, expensive, over the top productions.
Yeah. Dune and Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of in a film like this, which is really stripped back and really personal. But in terms of direction, like, I'm not an expert, but I think, you know, it was an absolutely fine job.
Yeah, for sure. I never noticed it, which sometimes I love noticing it because then you go, oh my God, look at how incredible that camera move was or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there are times where it feels like the directors know to get out of their own way and just tell the story.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, he does that really, really well. A lot of handheld. I actually remember being on location for one of his films, actually. It was... he did the film Brooklyn with your gal, Saoirse Ronan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was living in New York at the time and I went to Coney Island for the day. And I remember they were shooting a scene of that movie on the beach. And I remember looking down the beach and seeing Video Village, you know, which is where the director and all of them sit with the monitors set up watching the shots. And I just remember seeing that from a distance and I realized... I don't know if I knew then or after the fact when I watched the movie Brooklyn, I was like, God damn, I was there. I'm literally standing on the pier.
That's
cool. Yeah. So that was cool. That was cool. Did you ever see Brooklyn?
I haven't. No, it's on the list though.
I'm surprised. Yeah. Again, it's your girl Saoirse, man.
Yeah, man. Definitely need to get on that one.
Yeah. I think you'd like it. It's a good film from what I remember. And again, it's, when I saw that this film was directed by John Crowley, it was very much that. It's like, oh yes, he's a very simple filmmaker, but really focuses on characters and just tells a really interesting and emotional story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the way you put that, you know, that he kind of puts himself out of the way and just concentrates on the story at hand. You can definitely tell that was his approach to this film. How do you feel the non-linear narrative worked? Like, did you think it was effective? Do you think it was a good choice?
That's a great question. It's a great question because initially, one of the first things we see is these two sitting in a doctor's office and they get given a piece of news and they walk out and it's already emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I didn't realize at this point it was nonlinear. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, how are we going to, how is, how is this information now going to land with us? Because I don't know these characters. We've spent no time with them. Interesting to have this at the beginning of the film. And then when we started going back and forth, I was like, oh, okay, so we're going to interweave. I think it's fine. I think it works quite well. Could it have been told in a straightforward, you know, in a linear way, in a traditional narrative sense? Yeah, I think so. But as to what's more effective, really hard to say, actually, because the movie works so well as it does. So I would say non-linear, perfect. But maybe it could have worked the other way too. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree that it's kind of hard to say. I think typically I don't like it when films are structured like this, mainly because I think they can tend to suffer from pacing issues or kind of like narrative issues as well. But I think this film does a pretty good job of it. And why I think it does a good job is because it doesn't linger on moments in the past for too long. In terms of, it's not, so obviously, like I said, it's kind of mainly rooted around, let's call the present, where she's like dealing with her cancer recurrence. You know, that's kind of the basis of the film. And it has these flashbacks. For example, with the flashback to how they met, we're not going back to how they met like throughout the entire film
parallel
to the present, you know. It kind of goes back to how they met, and then a few scenes later, like, we move to the next stage of their relationship and the next stage of their relationship.
So it's always moving.
Yeah, it's always moving. Yeah. So in that way, it is effective, and I don't think it suffers from any pacing issues at all. I think it's actually structured incredibly well.
Absolutely agree with that. Yeah. And actually, you make a really good point. Yes, when you're telling a non-linear narrative, the danger is that you slow it down.
Yeah.
When you, either in the present or the past, either one. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they do not do that at all. Yeah, that's a great point.
But in terms, this is just what I was kind of thinking about after watching it. As much as I did really like it, I'm not sure how much, for me at least, it benefited the main narrative of the story in terms of how they were dealing with this situation that them as a couple and as a family are dealing with. Part of me thinks it would have benefited from just zoning in on this part of their life, because I think it could have still effectively built these characters just from us focusing in on this,
really,
you know, this big important heartbreaking thing that they're going through. And when I was watching the film, I kind of just wanted it to keep going, you know. I just wanted to get back to this point. I wanted to see where this is going. I wanted to see the choices they were making, especially Almut's character. You know, I wanted to see how, because she's a really interesting character. All I really wanted to know was how she was going to like face this issue. And sometimes when it kept going back, I just wasn't sure this was benefiting the main point of the film. I hope that makes some kind of sense.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's mainly because when we're in the present, I have no doubt about these characters, about who, the type of person they are and the type of life they have lived together, because they're so well acted and quite so really well written.
I see what you mean. The actors are already bringing all that history to their performance. That's very interesting, actually. That's very... And you know what? I wonder if this was a straight play, whether it would just focus on the present. But when you're putting something in screenplay form and you try, you want to be as cinematic as possible, right? Because you don't want... I don't know. I kind of feel like with certain films, choices are made to try and just hold the audience's attention as much as possible.
I do feel a little bit like that is what was happening here, but I'm not going to complain too much because, you know, I did actually like how they did it and it was very entertaining. So
absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. But it's very interesting to think about, because I mean, I actually felt that way with Conclave, mm-hmm. in that, you know, they're telling such a singularly focused story in such a primarily in one location. How do we make this as cinematically interesting as possible in a visual sense? So there's slow motion, there's montage, there's text on the screen, there's an mm-hmm. explosion at one point. Yeah. You know? And so, yeah, maybe, you know, I can see a really nice, intimate sort of theater piece between two lovely actors, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, telling this story. But yeah, in cinema, you feel the urge to bounce around a bit.
I was just going to say that, you know, I don't want to say anything too controversial here, but like maybe to an extent, it is a bit of a gimmick to kind of appease modern audiences a bit, just to make it a bit more, you know, back and forth, a bit more interesting. I don't know.
But it's a very interesting thing to think about. Yeah, mm-hmm. It really is. What did you think of the score for this film? Did you notice this, it? Or?
I definitely did notice it. I think it's a really, really nice score. Yeah, complements the film perfectly, and it's very, very emotive.
Yeah. This actually beats Dune Part 2.
Okay.
For best score for me for last year. Yeah, I did say, listen, give it some time and maybe something mm-hmm. will sway me. This has swayed me.
Yeah, do you know what? That is so fair. That is very fair.
Yeah, it just feels way more impactful. It's a lovely, beautiful score by Bryce Dessner, is the composer's name, who I really like. I already know of him because he scored the movie Cyrano. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that one? The with Peter Dinklage?
No, I didn't. No.
I really enjoyed it. He's part of a band, a rock band called The National, which I didn't realize. But he's collaborated with so many artists. I mean, I'm pretty sure that he worked on the score for The Revenant, I think, with what's that composer's name? Ryuichi Sakamoto.
Okay.
Who did the score for the, you know, big Japanese musician. But he's been around. But as soon as I saw, yeah, basically that he was composing this, I thought, I've already listened to something I love of his once. Mm-hmm. And I listened to the score before I watched the movie. And easily, by the way, from track one all the way to the end, I was like, such a great listen. So, yeah, awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely have to check more of his stuff out then.
For sure, yeah. For sure. And I recommend listening to the album as well. Mm-hmm. And on that, I'm so surprised that this movie hasn't been nominated for anything.
Yeah, I was kind of looking as well, and I was surprised at the reception of the film. It's been... Okay, saying it's been lukewarm is a bit harsh. I say it's been more than lukewarm, but I was expecting more, you know, I was expecting more hype around this film after yeah. having seen it at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this
considering as well how much people love Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield.
That's the thing. Yeah. And I don't want to say that this movie is Oscar bait, but it does seem like Oscar-y type baits.
Yeah.
You know, telling the story of someone suffering from a disease and illness and they're dying, but it's a love story. I mean, that is, you know, I'm so surprised. And like you said, it's, I mean, if only to get Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh to attend the ceremony. Mm-hmm. Very surprised. Yeah. And even, you know, this Bryce Dessner not getting nominated for his score. Yeah,
I'm
shocked by it. Oh well. I mean, they'll survive. They'll be all right. But yeah. Cool. Should we jump onto pairings?
Cool. Do you want to go first?
Yes. Sure. I'll go first. But one thing I was going to say before I go was, I don't know about you, but I will forever make eggs the way they do in this movie from now on.
Yeah. Like I never knew that was a thing.
No.
You know, Just on that as well, I thought that was like a really beautiful little motif in the film, and it was an amazing way to finish it.
To go back to, yes, and
just if you weren't already crying enough.
Exactly. And oh, I want to talk about that ending so bad, but I don't want to spoil. But just to say, like, yes, we go back to it, but I love how there's no mention of, it's just an act, it's an action that's being done.
Mm-hmm.
We know the power of that moment, and that's all we need. We do not need to explicitly reference it.
Yeah. Deals with it perfectly.
Yes.
Amazing way to finish it.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. Cool. All right. So pairings. I thought a fun. It's not exactly fun, but I thought of the movie Blackbird from 2019. Have you heard of it? It's a Roger Michelle movie.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. Yeah. Roger Michelle, who I really liked as a director. He died in 2021, I believe. I think he was South African, actually.
He directed Notting Hill.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And he directed so many wonderful films that I really love. Again, he's another director. He gets out of his own, you know, he gets out of his own way, and he just tells really lovely character focused stories. And this movie Blackbird is with Susan Sarandon, Kate Winslet, Mia Wasikowska, Sam Neill, Rainn Wilson is in it. I mean, it's a big cast. And I think I watched it in the pandemic. And it's Susan Sarandon basically is a mother, you know, this the, sort mm-hmm. of a matriarch of this family, and she's dying. And she decides, I can't remember if the whole family knows that she's dying, but she invites everyone to her house to have Christmas, even though it's not Christmas. She wants it to be Christmas. And it turns out it's because she's decided that she's going to take medication that will end her life that night before she goes through the chemotherapy and before she puts her body through all that awfulness and before her body gets ravaged by disease and illness. She wants to go out when she's feeling healthy and with wonderful memories. And I think her husband, played by Sam Neill, is a doctor or was a doctor, and he's able to procure this medicine from some country. So he's basically had it smuggled in illegally to do this. And it's just a wonderful film. It's a wonderful cast. It's a wonderful film about facing life on your own terms, going out on your own terms, if that's what you have to do. And how do I leave creating the best memories, not just for myself, but for the people I've left behind. And that really made me think about what Almut's character is doing in this film and the choice that she makes. It's a lovely film. I really recommend it.
Yeah, great. That sounds really cool. Definitely need to check that out.
Mm.
So I kind of spoiled my pairing already. Sorry about that. But yeah, I would pair this one with After Sun. And, you know, as well as the reasons I mentioned before, you know, in a very broad sense, these are both films about relationships with a big dark shadow looming over them. In We Live in Time with physical health, and After Sun obviously being more about mental health. And they're both films that have strong relationships at the core, with We Live in Time being between a husband and a wife, and After Sun being the relationship between father and his daughter. And I think, you know, After Sun more so personally for me, they're just very, it's powerful in a very similar sense, and just heartbreakingly sad in a very similar sense. And again, like I said, I feel like they both end on very similar beats. After Sun, though, for me being much more impactful and shocking.
For sure, yeah, for sure. That's a really great pairing. And I really see where you're coming from in terms of, it. Yeah, like you said, it's about relationships, but a relationship that's changing by degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, that's really, really tough. That's a great pairing. I just had this thought in my head of you, from now on, only choosing after son as your pairing and finding a way to justify it. I just thought, I was thinking in my head, it was like, okay, Nosferatu, what would you like? After son, it's about relationships. There's a dark shadow looming.
I'm sure there's a way.
Because haven't you paired after son already?
I think I did. You know, sorry guys, I'm not very original.
Not at all. I just can't remember what film you paired that with.
What was it for?
I feel like...
I definitely did, though.
Yeah. You definitely did, yeah. Because I remember for the Instagram page doing the poster for it. All right, hang on. I'm going to look it up right now because that's going to be available to me any moment now. And it's not.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, here it is. You paired it with for The Outrun.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
You paired it for The Outrun, which also makes sense, yeah. That's great. That's great, man. Thank you. Before we wrap this up, I wanted to, moving off of the film, I wanted to mention the AI transcripts that are being generated from our chats together. Now, I have found myself, when I'm bored at work, reading through our transcripts. What does that say about me? I don't know. but sometimes I get bored, and I decided to look back at our conversations, and sometimes what it thinks we're saying and how it translates that is actually quite, it's gold. So
Have you got a few to share?
I've got a few. Okay. So these are my favorites from the ones I was flicking through so far. So there were a couple of times when you were talking about Saoirse Ronan.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you said Saoirse, I think this AI it didn't know what was going on. So it transcribed it to Sausage Ronan, which I think is quite lovely. There was another time it transcribed it to Sorcerer Ronan.
Okay. I quite like that one.
I like that one. For some reason, throughout the Dexter Fletcher episode, I don't know what it was hearing, but for some reason, throughout the entire conversation, you keep saying, thanks. Thank you. And so Dexter would say something like, yeah, you know, I was in that movie, The Bounty, with Anthony Hopkins. And you'd be like, thanks. And then he'd be like, and I'm like, hang on a minute. Luke did not spend this entire conversation saying thanks. Thank you.
It was probably me just going like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. This is a good one. So Dexter mentions the Grand Budapest Hotel as, you know, a film that he loves of Wes Anderson. It transcribed that to Grand Poodle at Best Hotel, which sounds like a movie I'd watch. No, it sounds like a film I'd watch. Grand Poodle at Best Hotel. And then he asked us, Dexter asked us, you ever see They Live? So obviously he's referencing the John Carpenter movie, They Live. You ever see They Live? And my response was, I never saw Where They Live, no.
That just sounds like the punchline of a really crappy joke.
Yeah, it does. It does. And then the final one that I caught, because again, it takes you by surprise because I didn't expect this line to be next, but I mentioned how me and Carrie Ann went to go and see the movie In the Heights in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just go, love you. I'm going to keep an eye out for more because I just, it really tickles me. Cool. All right. Well,
I think before we go, think so this week, me and Chris found out that we are actually the 44th most listened to film podcast in Bulgaria.
We are indeed.
Which is, you know, I've been going around work all week, you know, shouting about this fact.
Yes.
But, you know, I think we need a little shout out for our Bulgarian fans out there.
I agree. Shout out to all the Bulgarian listeners. Thank you. I will try and insert here a nice thank you in Bulgarian.
Благодаря ти.
It means a lot, and we hope that we continue to make you happy, and that you continue enjoying this. It's what a win for us. I love that. Yeah. I love that fact. I've also been raving about it. Listen, we'll take that. Cool. We will take that.
Definitely.
And before we leave, I'd like to make a recommendation. Oscar nominations are out. And last episode, we had Adam Davis on, also known as Tex. And it was a great episode. He's a great guy. Sounds like he's a busy guy. And one of the things he promoted was his movie podcast, The Oscars, What Were They Thinking? Which sounds like a blast. Mm-hmm. It's him and Bruce Valanche, who is a comedian, writer, and actor, who won 2 Emmys for his writing of the Oscar telecasts, for which he wrote many. So he will provide some insight as, I guess, the man on the inside as to the sometimes confounding nature of the Academy Awards, what wins, what doesn't, and why. Sounds like a ton of fun. I will be adding this to my list of movie podcasts, and I encourage everybody to go and check it out.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Luke. I'll see you on the next one, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening, everybody. And you know who we mean, Bulgarians out there. special thanks to Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger, and you can find more of his music on stefan-krieger.com. Our episodes are edited by the one and only Noah Anderson. If you like the podcast, please share it and spread the word far and wide. Maybe we'll get to number 44 in Estonia next. Who knows? And after you've done all that, go and watch a movie at the Phoenix Cinema, and I'll see you there.